Welcome to the Happiness First Radio Show, where you learn to consciously create the life you want. Your host, Lorraine Gordon, an expert in law of attraction and present moment awareness, along with her expert guests, give you the tools you need to focus your attention and thoughts to create your best life. And now, here's your host, Lorraine Gordon.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Your Happiness Way Radio Show. I'm Lorraine Gordon, and today I'm so excited to be talking to you about the keys to finding long-lasting true love. So many of my clients and students come to me because they may be expert in so many areas of their life and confident and have gotten ahead, and yet that seems to be the one area in which they feel as if they're failing and they're not able to find that perfect one, their soulmate, the one that's meant for them. You know, I consider myself an expert because being a manifester, I attracted my husband 34 years ago, and I did it very consciously. I used techniques and tools that I will be giving to you absolutely for free. If you're interested in using visualization to attract your love or attract your perfect career or attract money, well-being, health, I've written a very informative book that I'm offering to you for free. Just go to my website, lorrainegordon.com. That's LorraineGordon.com, and subscribe, and you'll get that. You'll also receive a 5-minute guided meditation to bring you into peace and clarity. You know, your Mr. or Mrs. Wonderful could be right in front of you, but if you have a very busy, chattering mind, you cannot hear guidance from your higher self, that guidance that may be telling you, this is the person, or give this person a chance, or look to your left, or walk through that door, or take that drive, and yes, it's okay to go to the market right now. All of these little synchronicities, or you may think of them as coincidences, that occur in your life when you're able to hear the urgings of your higher self. And this guided 5-minute meditation will help you to quiet down and tune in to that wisdom and that guidance. So if you're looking for success or bettering yourself in any way, I highly recommend go to LorraineGordon.com and you'll get these gifts for free. Today, I am really thrilled to be bringing to you an expert in her field by the name of Marion Baker, and she is a registered therapeutic counselor and she specializes in transpersonal therapy. This is a modality that marries spirituality and psychology. And it took Marion 30 years of searching for love to finally uncover the key to sustaining long-term loving relationships. So she was equipped with another way to look at relationships that make them more effective as well as create a greater spiritual connection and freedom. And she is compelled to share this perspective with women who have been frustrated in finding lasting love. So without further ado, I am thrilled to be bringing you Marion.
Thank you so much, Lorraine. It's great to be here.
Well, it's wonderful to have you, and this is a subject that many find very compelling and
Absolutely. Very
interesting. Why don't you tell us a little about your journey?
Yeah, I mean, I was in my 20s and 30s and happily, not single, but, you know, sort of running the gamut of a couple of year relationships and being single and fairly happily doing it at that stage. And then once I hit 40, it just felt like I wanted something deeper. Like I really wanted to know what it was like to actually have an intimate relationship with a man that felt that was sustaining. And the only problem was that I had only done short-term. I didn't know how to do long-term. So once I decided, okay, I want something bigger, deeper, stronger, I didn't know what to do. Like, I was at a loss. And plus, every time that I had to walk away from a relationship, I was heartbroken because I didn't really understand what had happened. And so I was just so bad at relationships that I had to delve. I had to really delve clearly and fast into, you know, what makes a successful relationship. And so I think I was about 45 years old, I took my counseling program that totally opened my eyes to
really, you mean,
what
well,
love really is.
You were educating yourself, and in that education, in order to help others, you helped yourself.
Absolutely, yeah. And the idea of the counseling program is they use your life as the curriculum. So in the 3 years that you're being learning to counsel, you are also counseled. So I had to, as part of my agenda in my counseling program, I had to get my life in order.
Well, you said something interesting. You said you weren't good at relationships.
No,
What does that mean?
I was very reactionary, and I would, you know, run at the first sign of trouble. You know, and like in my book, I have all these little characters, and Lizard Brain is one of them because he ran my life for so many years. I had this little lizard brain, and the second that he would smell trouble, my hands were up in the air, and I was running away screaming.
For those out there that don't understand the lizard brain, why don't you give us a little idea of what that is?
Yeah, it's the part of our brain that is still caveman reactionary. Like it's the part where it takes our emotions and runs with them.
Right, and it's a very, very real part of our brain physiologically.
Very, yes, absolutely. Very real and very strong. Like it still is a strong, it's where our instincts live too. So it's like very strong.
Yeah, well, it is, but you know, I agree with you. And I think, you know, I use the pain body release technique because if you're suffering in any way, that lizard brain can take over much more easily than if you're feeling safe and secure.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
And so, okay, so you were reactionary.
Mm-hmm.
And what was that doing to the men in your life?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't like it, of course. You know, anything that they saw or that I saw that they would be doing, I would translate in a way that I thought that they were doing something against me. And, you know, it was always fear-based thinking. It's like, oh, they're doing this to hurt me, or they're, you know, I was always feeling hurt or brokenhearted, or and then I would get upset, and it was always their fault, and they were the ones to blame. And that just wasn't a good model for relationships.
So that sounds like victim mentality.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, you bet.
Yeah, and so this is really interesting. So you're going to school, and now you find out that you have a victim mentality. Were you surprised?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
You know, because usually the reactionary one, the one that's out, beating somebody else over the head, thinks of themselves more as a perpetrator rather than a victim. So that probably was kind of surprising.
Yeah, absolutely. Because like you said, in the rest of my life, I was very functional. You know, whatever I wanted to do, I was able to get out there, and like, I'm a go-getter. So I, you know, could strike out in the world with no fear on my own and just do what it is that I wanted to do and be what I wanted to be. So to me, to be a victim, that wasn't the, you know, the picture I had of a victim. But
exactly.
Until you tried to get close to me emotionally, then it was a whole different story.
How interesting. So I bet you had to look back and kind of figure out where this victim mentality came from, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I did a lot of delving and a lot of soul searching. I mean, in the first year of the course that I took, we actually didn't learn to counsel at all. We were counseled through the first year. So we got to learn the complete roadmap of our psyche. And so I got to look at, you know, all the little nicks and crannies of my being and see what was there. Like, I got to lift under the lid of myself and see not only what was there, but who I really was. Because when I'm always reacting and in victim consciousness, I don't actually get to see who I am, because I don't, like, there's no space for me to have any self-acceptance either. So, you know, it's a big double-edged sword there.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you have to employ something that I'm sure you call the observer. You have to witness yourself in order to get enough perspective.
Yeah, and the beauty of when I was doing my course is when I was in group therapy, when I couldn't see myself, others could. So it's like I would be in my victim mode. I would be going, you know, because there would be moments when all of us were like on the floor crying like a puddle, you know, not knowing that we were in our victim mode. And what other we would get feedback, and what other people saw wasn't the victim. It was, you know, a vulnerable child that didn't get the love it needed in the right moment, or, you know, just a beautiful being that was brave enough to show everybody, you know, what was going on for them. So it was through this reflection of others that I was actually able to see something different.
Well, it sounds like you had a wonderful experience.
It was. I would do it again in a heartbeat. I that's one of my goals, is to have everybody do that.
Yeah, it sounds sounds really great. So tell us, I want to talk for just a moment about your book. You have a book called The Lime Green Plastic Covered Couch.
I do.
Now, that's an interesting title for a book. What made you call it that?
That's one of the very first questions everybody asks me. I kind of have to give away the first couple of chapters of the book to be able to answer this, so you have to stay with me to the end, because that's kind of where you get to see. Chapter one is this totally romantic vision, because that's where I found that I got caught up, is in this sort of Cinderella fantasy of what love should be. And so chapter one is my husband and I, my courtship. Like, we actually met 20 years ago, and we worked together for a couple of years, and we dated for a year. But we were just young, like we were babies, and I wasn't serious at that time, and I didn't realize that he was. And he said, you know, when we met again recently, he said, you know, I would have married you then. He said, I was head over heels, and I walked away from us wondering how I would have had to have been different for you to want to stay. And he said, you know, I knew I'd have to go away and grow up a bit. So he said, he told me, he phoned me 10 years later and said, okay, how about now? And I don't even remember the phone call.
Wow.
You know, the poor guy, I was in my 30s, I still wasn't ready, like I still wasn't even close. And so when we met up this time, it was when I was ready and I was looking, and I had done a lot of, done a lot of change and really wanted to have a deeper experience in relationship, and he came along. We met up again on Facebook and had this, you know, beautiful whirlwind romance, and he just said, I'll marry you in a heartbeat, tell me when. And so, he whisked me away to the Wicked and Ishin, which is this beautiful boutique inn on the beach.
That sounded like another fairy tale.
Our courtship was absolutely a fairy tale. Like, our whole getting together was a fairy tale. And we got married on the beach and had this beautiful wedding, and everything was, you know, fantastic. And then chapter two of the book actually tells you that's one of my realities. My other reality is that the first time I walked into this man's apartment, I had to shimmy down sideways because his hallway was filled with Rubbermaid tubs full of the stuff that he likes to collect. And, you know, I walked into his living room and it was filled with sports paraphernalia and a very, very typical guy's bedroom. And the next thing I know, he hears that Chico down the hall has bed bugs, and so, being very practical, he covers all the furniture in lime green plastic so that he doesn't get bed bugs. So I live with this man who absolutely adores me and loves me and treats me like gold, and yet he's got this quirky, very practical, non-aesthetic side that we had to really delve and find our way through that so that I could live with him, because he wanted me to live with him in his place.
Did you?
And so
you did, obviously, you're saying you did live with the lime green.
Yeah, initially. I mean, we now have a beautiful brand new place where the lime green plastic covered couch didn't come.
I'm so happy for you.
Thank God. But yeah, like, it was like his way and my way had to find a way to meld and to meet, and so I had the beautiful opportunity to have to share who I am with him in a way that I'd never shared with anybody before, because that was, if I had seen his place before, I just would have left and gone, okay, well, this is hopeless. But instead, I got to share my needs and who I am and say, look, this isn't who I am, and I can't live like this, and can we find a way that we can both live together? And so we worked. It became a beautiful opportunity. This lime green couch became a beautiful opportunity instead, and so I have very fond memories of it.
Well, sure, because it opened up the door to communication. Otherwise, it was so obvious, we have to talk about this.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. What I find interesting is that initially he thought something was wrong with him. Nothing was wrong with him. You just weren't ready.
I wasn't ready, yeah.
And so many look at themselves and think when a relationship doesn't work that something is wrong with them. And that may or may not be true. It may just mean that the partner is at a different place in their life. And I think it's so important that we don't denigrate ourselves when a relationship doesn't work out.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you there.
You know, so yeah. Are you, and I assume that this is a ridiculous question, but are you an advocate for marriage and monogamy?
You know, it's funny. I'm not necessarily. I've been asked that question before, and because my book is all about finding lasting love, people think that I am an advocate, and I'm not. Like, I'm an advocate for whatever makes you happy. Mm-hmm. So, like, and you know, Kim Cattrall on Sex and the City, her character Samantha, she tried being a monogamous and she was miserable, you know, and so she's happy dating and having sex with many men, and that's what keeps her happy. So if that's what keeps you happy, I am an advocate for that. And at the same time, there is some beauty and some depth and some real intimacy that you can get into when you're in a marriage that I don't think that you can get into when you're in, you know, when you're just dating or having non-serious relationships, that I love. And when people are absolutely ready for that and they're not able to find it, that's where my book comes in.
You know, you brought up something interesting in regards to Sex and the City and Kim Cattrall's part, Samantha. When she was undergoing cancer, she was in a long-term relationship and very happy to be there. She really relied on him at that point, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Like that, and see, there's the catch-22. And then once she was okay, then she felt restless again. So yeah, that's the one thing that I never knew existed, was that, you know, sense of just being able to slip into a comfortable old shoe when you need to cry, or when you're in trouble, or when you need a sense of safety, or like her, when she's going through some hard times. You need people. You need people.
You really do. And yeah. And it's so wonderful to have them. I know having a 34-year marriage, you have ups and downs. There are definitely ups and downs. It's not just all roses. But I think what having a long-term relationship is about means getting through the tough times and making a decision to stay together. And that, of course, has been my choice and my husband's choice. But there's nothing like that familiarity and that safety and that security that family and long-term relationships bring.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, my hat is off to you. 34 years of marriage blows my mind, and I congratulate you for that. Because that's the thing, is like the when you're going through the tough parts, the commitment is to get through them and to stay, even though it may take, like, sometimes tough parts last for years.
Well, I think lots of times tough parts last for years. I have many married friends who have had 5 years of difficulties, but they decided to stay together, and they're best friends, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes the romance is gone, and there is a great friendship that stays. Tell me about that. What do you think about that sexual high versus long-term relationship?
Well, I'm glad that you asked that. I'm thinking that's going to be my second book is The Passion Trap, because I had another interviewer ask me about that. It's like, you know, and the person was single, and she's like, well, you know, how do you keep the passion alive? And I'm like, well, you know what? That was my problem, is in my Cinderella fantasy of what relationships could be, or were supposed to be, quote, I thought that everything had to stay passionate forever, and once you lost that passion, the relationship was over. And what I'm finding is that isn't true. Like, this, the friendship, like you said, the friendship that my husband and I have developed is equally as beautiful and as keeps me as open-hearted as the passion did. Like, yeah. I love him. I love him as dearly in this friendship stage as in the passion stage. In fact, more so in many ways.
Mm-hmm. Like, plus, you're more sane. Don't you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's like my raging hormones aren't running my brain. Like,
right.
I now can see that this is a kind, loving man who treats me well, and I'm in for that, you know, I'm game for that.
Yes, and I think that what you touched on is common for so many people that break up a marriage after a few years because they think the passion is gone and they're not.
Yeah.
And it's kind of childish, isn't it? It's sort of living in that childhood fantasy of Prince Charming, you know, whisking you away, and you're always going to be on the back of that white stallion in this romantic drama. And it's just not the way life is.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not my experience in this relationship, for sure. But it was never a stage that I thought that I would want. But now that I'm in it, I'm like, yeah, this is fantastic.
It's the best.
So yes, when you say it's childish, you're right. Like, I really had to grow up to be able to be in this relationship. And and I was growing up in my 40s, like not in my 20s. So, you know.
Well, you know, I think that that's probably true of so many people. What we expect to have happen versus what really happens can be light years apart.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I mean, I know so many people in their, God, in their 60s that are incredibly immature still.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they have their own ways where they excel, and this is probably still their struggle.
You know, and when I talk about immaturity, I'm not talking about a childlike nature and the ability to be delighted in life. That is a beautiful quality that I would love to keep forever and ever, and hopefully I will and you will too. Tell me something. How did you what prompted you to write the book?
Well, you know, it felt like it was written through me. Like I never sat down to write a book. I felt like I was compelled, and like it's been actually the most beautiful experience that I've ever had in my life. Like it felt like the book wrote me. I didn't write the book.
Now tell me how I've done a little writing myself, and when that happens, it's awe-inspiring, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely. I've never felt so fulfilled doing anything.
But didn't you feel as if you were almost taking dictation?
Yes, absolutely. That's exactly what it felt like. I was like, here's a pen, here's a paper, go sit down and put up with it. Yeah.
And then it unfolds in a way you don't necessarily expect it to unfold. It'll take a turn, right?
That's right. Like, I knew this, like, when I was sitting down to write, I knew the first two chapters because I knew sort of the premise of the book and the, you know, the fairy tale romance, and then the you know, rubber hits the road reality. But I didn't know what the rest of the book was going to be, and so I just started sharing the book with other women, and other women started telling me their stories, and so their stories became the rest of the book.
Mm-hmm.
So it all just kind of presented itself to me. In a way that, like, when I'm, it's like, oh, okay, well, I'd like a story about that. And then I'd talk to a woman and she'd have a story about that.
So are you working as a transpersonal psychologist?
Yes. Yep. I'm a counselor. I'm not a psychologist. I'm a counselor.
Uh-huh.
But yes, I work with a transpersonal model. And what that means is, literally translated, is transpersonal means beyond the personal. So I work with people on both a human struggle level. So, you know, we're all human in our struggle. And I work with people in a way where I also believe that there is something bigger at play.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not just our personalities. There is something bigger that this bigger to me is a sense of love that has my back. Like every day I learn to trust, and I surrender my day. I say, and I surrender, you know, I surrender this interview, and I say, you know, Spirit, speak through me. Have the people that need to be touched through this process touched. And it's like I become a conduit for what wants to happen. And so that's what I learned through me being counseled, and that's what I hope other people will learn.
You know, even though that is it's quite a difficult place to get to, where you're able to give up the reins and give up the control and trust, life is so much easier when you're able to do that, don't you think?
Absolutely. And I have an easy way to describe it, is like, you just, every moment of your life, you just say, ask yourself, am I coming from love? Am I coming from fear? Am I coming from love? Am I coming from fear? And it was only through counseling that I was actually able to figure that out.
Well, okay, so that also means that you have to get an immediate answer. What does that feel like, that answer? What says love and what says fear?
Yeah, see, that's the thing, is I don't always get an immediate answer because I'm not always clear. So it's in my greatest struggle that I'm not always clear. So I have to sit there. Like, I have to sit in the question and just be curious for sometimes days, sometimes months, sometimes weeks, sometimes years.
And allow that.
And just continue, continuously allow. And the more that I do that, the faster my answers come.
Right, because there's no rushing it. You just have to be open.
No, I've got my agenda and Spirit has their agenda. You know?
It's so true, although I do believe that being open and being, you know, asking the question gives Spirit a place to give you the answer.
Absolutely. You know. Yeah, absolutely. And I have to be ready to receive it.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And now, okay, so tell me, how did you get ready to receive the answer?
Practice, like you said, you just have to continue to do it and continue to do it and continue to stay curious. And like now when I can feel my lizard brain coming on, like now that I've had, 8 years of practice, I can go, oh, okay, there's my lizard brain coming on. He's going to try and project something onto the world where I need to be, that I need to be afraid of. And so I'm going to, and right now I'm afraid and I'm seeing it that way, but I know that that's not true.
Okay, so you're able to back up, get objective, and see what's going on from an impartial standpoint.
Yeah, faster and faster I am. Like it's not always true. Like like yesterday, my husband and I were having a conversation about...
in quotes, in quotes.
Yeah, we were writing down a list of, you know, what we, where we want, because we want to live in a smaller town, and so... eventually, and so we were writing a list of the things that we wanted, and so he wrote his list, and then he asked me, what do you want? And I said, well, I'd like to be able to live on a lake. And he started saying something about, well, you know, where we are, there's going to be lakes everywhere. We don't have to live on it. And what I heard him saying was, no, you don't get what you want. I get what I want. And then, so I got upset, and then I had to breathe it out for a few minutes because, I shut up because I know when I keep talking in those moments, that's not a good thing. So I shut up and I said, you know, I'm feeling upset. Let me just sort this out. And so I sat with it for a few minutes and I surrendered it. And finally I said to him, what I heard you say is you get what you want and I'm not allowed to have what I want. And he said, no, what I'm trying to say is that there'll be 20 choices for you, not just one.
Quite the opposite.
So, right. Right. So, yeah, once I let my lizard brain calm down and go, okay, what I'm seeing here isn't necessarily true, because that's what kept me out of relationship before, is I was always seeing them as the bad guy or the enemy or not giving me what I want, and that's not what he was saying.
And it was kind of like a child sort of throwing a tantrum, saying, I want what I want, and you're not giving it to me.
That's right.
Wow. So how were you able to look back at that and not feel defensive? You know, in other words, you're embracing what was in order to move past it.
Yeah. Like I said, it's taken me lots of practice. Like through learning how my psyche works, I realize that there's layers of it. And so the first layer is always going to be that fear-based layer where I want to attack. And then underneath that are my real feelings. And so I've been through that journey so many times that I now sit, if I'm in attack mode, I now know to sit back, listen to my feelings, listen to what it is that I really want. It's like, okay, so what am I really feeling here? What am I making this mean? What am I hearing him say? Like I start asking a lot of questions, which is the way you let spirit enter, by getting curious. What am I feeling? What's really going on here for me? And the beauty of that is, like, underneath your upset of what's really going on, there's always sadness, there's always loss, there's always what you make it mean, there's always what you're believing about yourself. And then if you can really get to the bottom of it, ultimately what you're believing is that you're separate from spirit, you're separate from the source of love that connects us all. And once you can get past all of your own psyche to that source, everything just opens up.
Because then you feel safe. So when you're safe, you're open.
Well, not only that, but spirit gives you the answers. Like I could almost hear spirit say, question what he's saying to you. Don't make it mean what you think. Like my favorite bumper sticker is, don't always believe what you think.
Oh, I love that. And I want to talk a little more about that in a moment. But right now we've got to take a word from my sponsors. So we'll be right back.
Okay.
The power of the I am is yours at LOAAffirmations.com, bringing you the very best in audio affirmations programs and introducing our newest title, I Am Happy, Healthy, and Wealthy. All of the LOAAffirmations.com programs are MP3 instant downloads and come with multiple audio and subliminal tracks. Order yours today at LOAAffirmations.com.
Have you ever imagined a life without worries, fears, and problems? What if I told you that you no longer had to live like that? Changes are possible for you through my teachings and affirmations, CDs, DVDs, and apps. Through our book, Peace in the Present Moment, Eckhart Tolle, Byron Katie, and I can show you how living in the present moment will change your life. Visit my website, peaceinthepresentmoment.net, and get inspired on my Facebook page of over 73,000 likes.
Okay, we're back again with transpersonal counselor Marion Baker. And today's show is all about finding long-term, lasting love. Marion?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We ended up talking about not to believe every thought that you think. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah. I mean, what I learned to question is behind my thoughts is always what I make it mean, what I'm believing about myself, what I'm believing about others, and ultimately what I'm believing that I'm believing that I'm separate from, a universe that loves me. And so every time I think that somebody is attacking me, I start to question it now, and it makes a big difference. Like I start to look at, okay, so what am I making this mean? Mm. I ask myself, what am I making it mean about me? What am I making it mean about the other person? And the only, what I've learned, and a beautiful thing to do, and I cover this in my book, is to check in. You know, like I said with my conversation with my husband yesterday, I'm making what you just said mean that you get what you want and I don't get what I want. Is that what you're saying? And he said, no, this is what I'm saying. So I could go, oh, okay.
Mm. Well, so you've got a great guy, too, that understands you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's willing to go there. What does he do?
For a living?
Yeah.
He is the manager of a company that imports seedlings and cuttings, and then his company is the broker for greenhouses, so they'll import the cuttings and sell them to greenhouses who then grow the flowers.
Okay, so
he likes flowers.
that's a very spiritual thing. One of my dear friends, Michelle Penn, wrote a book used her photographs in a book with Eckhart Tolle because of the flowering of the human soul. I mean, it's such a deeply spiritual place to be. Mm-hmm. When you're really seeing a flower. And
yeah.
but it is interesting that you are in a field that is somewhat metaphysical and definitely introspective. Mm-hmm. And your husband, you know, you would never think would necessarily go in that direction. And yet he does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's definitely not the burly football player kind of guy. He's the, hey, let me bring home some more flowers for our deck kind of guy.
What a great guy. That's the kind of guy I like. Yeah.
Yeah, he's very sweet.
Definitely. You know, that brings me to something else. Having worked with many, many women on finding love, the first thing so many of them will say to me is, he's not my type, or that one isn't my type, or this isn't my type, or I want that type. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. Like who we are attracted to is actually deeply ingrained in who we are, based on a lot of things, like our culture and our family as we were growing up, and our culture in our world as we were growing up, and it's a very complicated process. Like a lot of it even depends on whether you're from a patriarch or a matriarch. Like who was in charge in your family? Were the women in charge in your family? Were the men in charge in your family? Like in my family, I come from a family of strong matriarchs. So it's typical that I would be in a relationship with a matriarchal man because they're going to be we're going to be naturally attracted to one another. And there's so many other little things. There's so many messages about, you know, what love means to you, what love feels like. That's the big kicker, is what does love feel like to you?
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to attract someone that love feels the same. So say, for example, you were in a patriarchal family and your dad was never available. It's likely that you're going to be attracted to a man that makes you feel the same way as your father.
Mm-hmm.
So you're likely going to be attracted to unavailable men.
Of course, yeah.
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 Yeah, it's quite complicated.
But don't you think that, that for a woman that, sort of becomes very serious about a particular type, they cut themselves off of so many other experiences and possible places to find love?
Yes, and here's the important piece, is that until you actually learn to have a different relationship to those emotions when they come up for you, then you're always going to stay in that stuck place of being attracted to. Because I've tried being in a relationship with a man that I wasn't attracted to, and it just, didn't work. He eventually actually ended the relationship because he was tired of me not you know, loving him, and I don't blame him. But yeah, that you can't manufacture attraction, but you can do your piece, which is creating a different relationship to the feelings that when they come up, it's like, oh my God, my dad isn't available right now, and so this man isn't available, and so it brings up all these scary feelings in me. It's like when you can create a different relationship to that, there's now opening for being attracted to something else.
To being attracted to a man who is available.
Who is available.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
I get it. So tell me, Marianne, how is this book different than other books on relationships, though?
Yeah. I mean, for one thing, it comes from a transpersonal model. So I address two things. Like, I address all of our humanness, because, you know, most of the women that, like, we're trained from a little girl from Disney, you know, and They Live Happily Ever After, and Sleepless in Seattle, and all the movies where, you know, there's this unrequited love, and you suddenly come together, and you know, suddenly everything's happily ever after. We're all trained that way, and so many of us still live in that fantasy. And so the first few chapters of the book are all about that human part. Like, how do I even identify what a long-term guy looks like? You know, how do I know what that is if I'm struggling finding, like, if I'm just attracted to unavailable men? How do I even know what an available man says or does? You know, so I addressed that part on about the Cinderella fantasy, and how to identify if you are actually doing that to yourself. And then I also talk about the transpersonal piece, like, what can I do on it? Because the common denominator is always you. It's always you. Like, a lot of women say, oh, there's no good men out there. It's like, I call BS on that one. There's lots of great men out there.
Lots of them.
It's like, yeah, it's like, you're the common denominator here. It's like, your piece is to work on you. And so I encourage women to get counseling, to meditate, to, you know, find a different relationship to their emotions, so that they actually can prepare themselves to be the person that they need to be to have the relationship that they want. Like, that's more of the key.
I think the thing that you said that piques my interest more than anything is have a different relationship with their own emotions, which kind of goes back to what you were saying, is that's noticing your lizard brain.
Yes, absolutely.
Very, very interesting. So how does a woman begin to do that?
Well, my belief is that you can't do it by yourself. Like, you can read a bunch of self-help books, and they might change your mind about a few things, because everybody says, you know, thoughts become things. Yes, but where your thoughts come from and all the things that you're believing is your emotional field.
Right.
And you can't begin to experience something new emotionally unless you're in relationship to another. Because, I mean, I can sit here and stare at a wall, but that's not going to, you know, give me any feedback. So there's no way that you can have a new perspective from your own brain. So you need somebody else to actually bump up against to have a new reflection. And if that person is a counselor that has your best interest at heart and already has that different perspective, that's a great way to start. And the company that I did my 3-year counseling training program with is a company called ClearMind International. And you can do this 3-year program just for your own benefit. Like, you can do year one and just start to learn what it's like to create a new experience relationship with your emotions. And so if you want to do one-on-one because that's where you're most comfortable, I would encourage getting a counselor. If you want to do group therapy, check out ClearMind. Like, they might have something available for you that you didn't know existed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds really, really interesting. But they're located in Canada, correct?
They have satellite locations all over the world. So you can go to Oregon or Liverpool or London or Sweden, or they've just been to Calgary and Toronto, and they also have their courses online as well. So you have access to them wherever you are.
You know, also I think that most spiritual teachers will say relationships are here to teach you something. They're here as a learning experience. And going back to the Cinderella fantasy and thinking that, you know, it's supposed to be happily ever after and that's the reason for a relationship, no. It really is much more about what you just said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You need other people to be able to reflect back to you who you really are. So if you surround yourself with people that you know, believe in a loving universe, then they're going to continue to reflect that back to you. If you hang around with people that believe that the universe is an unfriendly place, then guess what? You know, that's what you're going to get back. So yeah, you need to find the loving people that are going to encourage you.
Definitely. And even provoke you, because we learn a lot. Yeah. We learn a lot through being provoked.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's
and provoked in a way that isn't a poke, but a hand up.
Well, yeah, but I think just you were provoked in talking about the lake.
Right.
You know,
oh, I see what you're saying.
It wasn't an intentional provocation. Through your relationship, you provoked yourself by the way you understood what he was saying. And so I think that's so much how we can learn from relationships, or not learn, break up, find a new guy, and get married again.
Right. Keep thinking that the next one will be the one. And that the problem was the last relationship, and it was him,
sure,
yeah,
sure, or her.
And you know what the difficult part is like there's lots of evidence for it. It's like, okay, well, this guy is so much more this, or so much more kind, or so much more this, or so much more blah blah blah. But eventually, you're going to get to the place where, and I see this as your opportunity. In every relationship, you're going to get to the place where you're going to struggle. And it might just take a little bit longer with some people than others, and so it looks like there's, you know, lots of evidence as to why this guy is the right one and that guy isn't. And but eventually you're going to get to where you struggle in every relationship, and that's where your opportunity lies. Is okay, so here is your, are you going to open to love here, or are you going to just continue to blame?
Right. So it's a matter of looking at it differently. This is an opportunity to grow in a relationship and to grow in my life and really learn how to love, or I'm just going to run away the way I always have.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And you can even stay in a relationship and run away. I mean, there's lots of things that we do to push our emotions down. You know, there could be a whole lemon meringue pie gone in 30 seconds and you didn't even realize it. Or you can go out and spend all your money on clothes. Or, you know, there's lots of ways in a relationship to shut down, too.
Interesting.
So,
yeah.
So the key is to look at your trigger. Like I was a clothes buyer and I'm an eater. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like shoes.
Yeah. And there's a balance, you know. So I would say after 34 years, there's probably been a couple of shoes, pairs of shoes that have saved your marriage.
You know, the next time my husband complains about all my shoes, I'm going to tell him that. I'm going to say it. And then if he doubts me, I'm going to give him your number, and you guys can have a little talk. How's that? So I want to bring up something that so many talk about, and that's, you know, coming up with a list of your wants when it comes to a long-lasting relationship. What do you think about that?
I love this topic. I've actually addressed it in a chapter in my book as well. My list is very different. My list isn't, I want him to drink red wine, or I hope he wears Gucci shoes. Like that to me isn't, it is probably most of what many women's list is. And my list is more like, how do I feel when I'm with this person? Mm-hmm. After spending some time with this person, am I getting to really know who he is? Am I really sharing who I am with this person? Mm-hmm. Do I feel like he has my best interests at heart? And a lot of, like, somebody made up this third date rule that I think is a bit odd, but apparently now on the third date, there is an expectation that you're going to sleep together. And so my question to many women would be, it's like, what if he's expecting it and you say no? Who does he become? Does he become the guy that tries to pressure you into it? Or does he become the guy that says, you know what, yeah, I'd like to get to know you better. Let's take it slow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so my questions are more like that. Who is he? Who am I? What am I feeling? Does it feel like he has my best interests at heart? And do I have his?
Sounds like when I'm counseling or coaching my clients, we talk about values. What kind of values do you want this other person to have? And and how do you want to feel when you're with them? It's so important. And so we do things like, how do you want to feel at the dinner table?
Yeah.
What's it going to be like when you're driving in the car to a family function that you really aren't looking forward to? You know, stuff like that. What's it going to be like if you get sick? That's the kind of list I have my clients make.
Perfect.
Along with security, you know, financial security and things like that. I mean, we are living in a material world. We have to have those things too.
Yeah. And exactly. I'm with you there. It's like if he's not... my mom actually had a friend who, she lived with her boyfriend for a lot of years, and the boyfriend, when he was willing out all his stuff, was willing it just to his sons and not taking out insurance for her or not making sure that she was covered too. And I was like, well, why would she let herself stay in a position like that? Like, that just doesn't sense. Why wouldn't she want to take care of herself in that way? And why wouldn't he want to take care of her?
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, those things are so important.
Yeah.
So important. You've got to feel safe and secure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, why would you want to be with a person that wouldn't want to have that taken care of for you?
Because to me, my way of looking at the world, that doesn't feel like I'm loved.
Right. I wouldn't feel loved or safe in that position.
Mm-mm. Not at all. But that brings me to our family and the culture that we grow up in. I think that, you know, if you look at some of the Middle Eastern cultures, the women are treated far differently than we are here. So how does that play a part in the importance in a relationship?
Hugely. Well, and like you say, it establishes a lot of your values. And so a family, like there's a thing called Bowen's family systems theory, which has, like, you know how you have in one family, say, some person is the alcoholic. So everybody points the finger to that person as the alcoholic. That's the problem. Whereas actually Bowen's family systems theory looks at the whole family as a unit, because even though this person is an alcoholic, each person has to play their part to let them to continue to be that.
Wow.
So, yeah. Interesting. So, yes, so it looks at the family as a whole, which then expands to your greater family, your outside family, your friends, your culture. So all of it plays a part in shaping who you are, and then you also have influence on who you are in that culture, and you can actually shape it more than you think. So, you know, how many kids, you know, say you've got a 16-year-old kid who's got an alcoholic father, how many kids sit down with their father and say, you know what, Dad, I really love you, and I see that alcohol is killing you and it's killing our family, and I really would like you to do something different.
Is that an uncommon thing? Because I know many that do that.
Oh, well, then...
Of course, I'm living among a lot of very conscious people.
Yes, you must be, because that's not normal. So I congratulate you, because I love that you live in that kind of culture, but most people don't, you know? So... So that's where we can be of influence in our culture rather than be influenced by our culture. So each person plays their role, and each role is important.
Don't you think, though, that we've evolved as a, as a society? I mean, I'm a California girl, and so many out here are psychologically very aware, spiritually very aware, metaphysically very aware, and we're kind of taught to ask those questions and say those things. So that's not the way it is in Vancouver?
It's becoming that way more and more in Vancouver, absolutely. But that's not the culture that we come from, and there's definitely a learning curve here. Uh-huh. And the West Coast is actually very open to
new things.
Like this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is a culture here. Our culture along this coast is becoming more and more that way, absolutely. But, you know, I go into small town BC, into where there's still lots of big trucks and mud and hunting, and people don't have conversations like that. Like, it's not their way of life.
Now, this is also interesting. So there's big trucks and mud and hunting. Is that survival, or is that just a pleasure?
It depends. Like, you can do anything. Like, some people can hunt strictly because their values are that they don't want to eat, you know, manufactured meat, and so they go out and hunt through love, mm-hmm. to feed their family.
Right.
Whereas others like to hunt because they like to kill something. You know, so like you can be doing anything. It doesn't matter what it is you're doing. The question is, are you coming from love or are you coming from fear?
Interesting.
So true.
Yeah. But I think what I was getting at is the hunter driving a truck maybe isn't introspective or looking at some of the things that you and I are talking about, because perhaps in that culture there's a survival thing going on. And first you've got to eat.
Yeah, that absolutely may be true, which tells me that it may not be strictly coming from fear. Like, if this man is out to feed his family, then he's loving his family and wants them them to survive. And the thing you're saying about survival is, the more that we struggle there in basic survival, the harder it becomes to be introspective.
Yeah, there's no time. We're trying to eat and live, just keep on breathing.
Exactly.
You say you've got a section in the book that helps women identify a long-term guy.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? How do you do that?
Yeah, it's a good question. What I tell women is to take a snapshot of what's actually happening, because a lot of guys will give you lines or tell you this or tell you that, or I'm here, I love you. But then it turns out they're only available, Fridays from 7 till 9. There's a bit of a disconnect there.
They're going home to their ball and chain.
Yeah, that's right. So what I tell women is to take a snapshot of what's actually happening. Mm-hmm. So don't believe what they're saying so much. Watch what they're doing.
Right.
And that will help you discern whether this guy is long-term. And what the things that a long-term guy says is the things like my husband was telling me. I've loved you from the day I met you. I will marry you tomorrow. I want to be with you. When are you, are you available tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow? I just want to spend my time with you.
Mm.
Those are the kinds of things that a long-term guy says. And, the reason I got twigged to it was I was still in my struggle years ago, and I met a guy who was he was just a friend, he was a coworker, and he had this lovely girlfriend, and she was a travel agent. And she would go away for a couple of weeks at a time, not often, but a couple of weeks at a time, away at a time. And so I was thinking, he'd be going, yeah, my girlfriend's away, I get to do whatever I want. But he didn't. He said, the first night's great. I get to order pizza and sit and watch the game on television. But after that, I just want her home.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, my eyes went bugged out of my head. I was like, what? There's guys that think like this? I can't believe it.
But that's,
so there are guys.
That's a great thing that you're talking about. But how many guys talk like that because they think they're supposed to? In other words, she's gone, and now I can just, be myself and lay around on the sofa and get dirty or whatever they do. do you think some men say those things because they feel that it's macho or they're expected to, but they don't really feel that way?
I'm sure that probably is true, too. Like, that'd be the thing that they'd be saying to the guys, she's away.
Right.
That will play. But I'm sure that in their heart they miss them, and sometimes maybe they don't, but there's got to be, my question would be, your macho ego wants to play that, but what's that about? Why, what's so bad about wanting to have your wife or your girlfriend near? And my husband makes no qualms about it to anybody,
He's a strong guy. So you've got, you also talk about women asking for what they need. Why is it that women don't automatically do that? And how would you suggest they go about it if they find it difficult?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's a book out there called Women Don't Ask. And I would like every woman on the planet to read it because it's just something that it's weirdly ingrained in us. We're because of our emotional and genetic makeup, we're the caretakers of the planet, and so we're the ones that have the babies, and so we are programmed to caretake. So how that translates into the business world is that men are making more money not only because it's an old boys' school, but because we don't ask. They've given specific examples in this book about how a man will walk into a negotiation and the company will say, okay, this is what we want to give you, and the man will say, no, this is what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And so men will get more, whereas a woman will go into negotiation and they'll say, this is what we want to give you, and the woman will say, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so our tendency, and I'm not saying this about every woman, but our tendency is to just not ask for our needs to be met.
Mm-hmm. How does a woman change that?
Well, first of all, you have to do some exploration, because you have to, like you were saying earlier, you have to establish what your own values are, what your own needs are, what your own desires are before you can even start asking for them.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of women
right.
don't even know what they are because they haven't done that exploration.
Isn't that
that's
true?
Step one.
Because
they're
believing they're supposed to have what they see other people having around them.
Yeah, right.
Which may be the guy with the Gucci shoes who you know, beats you behind closed doors.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so the self-exploration and the establishing of values is step number one, absolutely. And then step number two is just to start to practice in your life. Like, start to practice asking for little things of the people around you and see. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not everybody's going to be able to give you what you want every time, but the more and more you practice. Like, if I hadn't have practiced it, I'd still be living with a lime green plastic-covered couch and, some sports cigarette lighters proudly displayed on my mantle.
Uh-huh. You know? Well, thank goodness you got past that.
Yeah, it's like we were able to have that conversation. And, you know, what was funny is my husband actually said, you know, I'm glad that we were able to work through this because I would rather have you than my Seattle Seahawks mug.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you bring it down to that? It's either me or the mug?
Well, no, not so much. It was more like a cooperative thing. Because there are going to be some guys that want the mug more than you. It's like, okay, well, I hope you're happy with your mug. See you later.
Well, and there you go, though. That's not the language of love. And I think that there are a lot of women who disregard something that to you at this point would be so obvious. If your mug is more important than me, then this isn't love. But then maybe he's saying, if you really love me, you'd let me have the damn mug.
Right. And there were some things that, like, my husband is really clear on what's important to him. So there were some things that he said, you know what, this is really important. So I said, okay, I can live with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the other thing is
that as time goes by, it becomes less important and you can sort of finagle your way too. You've got to kind of remember.
Totally. It's true. It's true. It's like, as time goes by, you learn the stuff that is important, which is, you know, snuggling on the couch and having a good conversation rather than whether he put his shoes away that day.
So true. And that, again, values. Values. So I want to ask you, what in the heck is a love-o-meter?
Love-o-meter. See that? Yeah, it's the gauge that I've kind of given women so that they can get a sense of where they're at. And the thing that we don't get, and the thing that it's easy to take the blame off the other person with a love-o-meter, because I guarantee you, when you're in a relationship, your love-o-meter is equal to that of your partner. And when I first heard that, I was like, there is no possible way, because that guy's crazy. and once I learned about the emotional component, it means our emotional chemistry is matching. So, like, I actually was, like, when I was at my lowest point in relationship searching, I hooked up with a guy that I am sure now was psychotic. Like, he would see things that weren't there, he'd go into my emails and read all these emails that didn't exist. And like, hey, what are you doing going into my emails? And then he would see things in there that didn't actually exist, and then accuse me of having relationships with other men because of. And I was like, okay, well, but I stayed in because I felt like I actually dated this guy for 6 months because it stuck up on me, and he sort of showed me the side of him slowly. But on the other hand, my love-o-meter was at the depths of the pit of my soul at that point, and I was not in a good place. And so I matched him.
So you were willing to settle because you felt that that's all you deserved on some level.
On some level, absolutely. Like, I was in this, and my emotions matched his. And okay. So that's where the love-o-meter comes in. And the thing about your family culture is your love-o-meter is also going, your family is only going to teach you to fill your love-o-meter as much as theirs is filled.
Of course.
Yeah, so this, if you want to fill it more, you've got to go out and find an outside source.
I want to thank you, Marian. This has really been very enlightening. You've given us a lot of information to think about. And I want everyone to know that I'm going to have Marian's information right here on the listening link. If you're listening on Blog Talk or Libsyn or iTunes, wherever you're listening, you're going to be able to find information about Marian and her book and how to follow her on Facebook and Twitter, etc. Marian, I want to thank you for being my guest. How can people get more help and information?
Yeah, thank you so much, Lorraine. They can go to my website, which is easy to remember. It's www.themlimegreenplasticcoveredcouch.com. And on there, they'll find a link to the book. So it'll link them through to Amazon. They can grab the book. There's also some free resources on there, too. They can watch some videos and read my blogs and get some information that will help them. And, you know, once they read the book, if they decide that they want some more help, they can contact me through to, as well, and they can get some counseling help if they feel that this is for them.
Great. Thanks so much, Marianne. And maybe we'll have you back on another time. And for all of
you, I would love that.
I would love it, too. And for all of you that are listening, I just want to remind you, go ahead to LorraineGordon.com and download your free meditation and that visualization book that will help you to attract and bring in the love of your life, the job of your dreams, and your healthiest and best life overall. And for daily inspiration, Facebook, Your Happiness Way, and Twitter, at Lorraine Gordon. I will be back with you same time, same place next week. This is Lorraine Gordon, your online coach, bidding you adieu.
You've been listening to Happiness First, the Rest Will Follow with Lorraine Gordon. Because I'm happy. She'll be back next week with another great show. And to learn more about Happiness First, visit LorraineGordon.com. That's LORANE. GORDON.com. Be sure to subscribe and receive some fantastic free gifts. Lorraine wants to bring you more of what you want, so please make a comment on the show page here, or you can email her at Lorraine@LorraineGordon.com. And thank you for listening.